Hello, this is Jay Nemerill. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 639. Oh, God. Well, it's been a long day. Doing a lot of stuff, trying to fix this and that and this and that. And, gave up my lunch hour, getting home late. Exciting day in paradise. This episode is, well, I guess all of them from here on out. I mean, it might be getting kind of boring, but it's going to be on the culture of liberty for at least a little while longer. Let's call it Culture of Liberty Part 2. And, I was actually thinking this morning, and it just started to kind of come out, you know. Lisa and I were together, and about how things would actually look under a culture of liberty. What sort of laws would you have? And I said, one of my laws. Now some people say, who is it? Who's somebody I actually like? Dan Carlin. You can visit his website, www.dancarlin.com. And he's got Common Sense, is one of his podcasts. The other one is Hardcore History. Excellent podcast, I think. Now, he struggles a lot to put out material. And that's okay. He's very polished and very finished. It sounds really good. So it's really worth the wait. He's very thoughtful, and he provokes a lot of good thinking. I like it very much. One of his ideas is that we need to freeze the number of laws there are. If they're going to pass any more laws, they need to dispense with some of the older laws. This is something that, you know, we might be able to do without having to start some kind of bloody revolution. But personally, I'm the guy that says you're only allowed to add so many words to the body of law per time period. Like each session of Congress, or, you know, each Congress, which is a 2-year period, they can only add, say, 10,000 words. And, you know, you always have to think of how do you respect, or I wouldn't really say respect, how do you make accommodation for the way Congress is? Congress gets together and they fight and they hash and they give speeches and they dilly-dally over all kinds of weird things. And I would say each Congress needs to spend the bulk of its time crafting 1,000 words. Or 10,000 words. Now, 10,000 pages, 10,000 words. This will be its work. And I mean, they can hash over every single little word, every single little nuance. I think that would be a good usage of their time, since they are in Washington for two years, besides the campaigning and you know, trying to get support at home for whatever they're up to. That's at least give them something to do. I was always thinking about what a wonderful idea it would be if we just didn't let them stay there for as long, you know. If they were only allowed, you know, like in our state, in the state of New Mexico, you know, there's either a 30-day session or a 60-day session. These things are, you know, you know, every even year, every odd year, I forget which one it is a 60-day session, and the other one's only a 30-day. And you've got to get all your work done in 30 days, because then they close down the building and they send you home. Now, lately, there's been, you know, almost every year, I'd have to say, they call a special session. I think those also are of restricted amount of time, too, which is good. To take care of, quote-unquote, unfinished business, usually has to do with a budget that they could never agree on. You know, people always playing for time in their ability to control this hunk of money. I've always been one for saying, you know, you can give people something to fight over. You know, that's Congress's deal is, you know, we fight over what we have. Right now, the problem is what they fight over really ends up mattering to every single person in the country. Over 100 years ago, what happened in Washington was purposeless. In fact, most of the time, it wouldn't even be considered news particularly. It wasn't interesting to anybody outside the precincts of Washington. You know, you can say, boy, I really got one up on him. Ha-ha! I got $15 accounted to this instead of to what he wanted. And you could do this wonderful victory dance. But who cares? $15. Who gives a flip? Now, back then, $15 was probably worth a little bit more, but not significantly. Gee whiz. Not enough to get over 400 men all wild about it. So, one of the things I would do is first, they are only allowed to codify 1,000 words into law. And they can hash and haggle and vote and say all kinds of nasty things to each other, browbeat the American people all they want to, but it can only end up being 10,000 words that actually ends up affecting anybody. That's all they can pass. The sum total of all of the words in their bills that they pass in that two-year period can only equal up to 10,000 words. Of course, you can say, well, a lawyer can't say anything in 10,000 words. And you go, then you have to stop using lawyer speak. You got to just be straight on. You have to just tell it like it is. The other thing is to cut off their money flow. We need to put the American government on a budget. See, I know that's funny, and people all say, oh, that's really funny, Jay, you know, they've been on budgets for years. And you go, no, they haven't really been on a budget. They've gotten to write their own budget. They've got to play with that number down at the bottom all they want to. This war in Iraq is totally off budget. You'd think we were just fine. We're doing, you know, $80, $100, $200, $500 billion. That never shows up on any balance sheet. It never shows up anywhere. You know, our economy's fine. You go, only because you don't take into account that so much money that we're manufacturing doesn't even show up on the thing. Hey, it's raining. Fantastic. Now, I don't know how you stop that. There's two basic things you can do. Number one, take away the charter of the Federal Reserve. Don't let them print money anymore. Whatever money's out there is the money we basically got. All of a sudden, the price of the dollar will start rising amazingly. All of a sudden, pennies will start being worth something again. Stop the printing of more money. Only have the money that you have, and that's all. You can't just manufacture more because you feel like that might be good for the economy to make it look like there's more money going on. Make everybody feel like they got a raise, and they really didn't. That's all just kind of playing games. And the fact that we allow this is kind of funny. Because there has to be some standards. Our dollar is no standard. It's only relative to other currencies where they do the exact same thing. When you have something that's hard to manufacture, like, say, gold, for instance, you can get a pretty good sense for how much something is really worth when you indicate how much gold it costs to, you know, how much gold it would take to buy that piece of property, and see that, you know, the amount of gold hasn't changed precipitously. There has been no inflation compared with gold. Prices of things really haven't gone up particularly. Price of oil remains pretty steady compared to gold, a lot of people say. I have not crunched the numbers at all. So you stop that, you put Congress on a small budget. That's where their power is. Their power is in the purse. The more money they have to play with, the more powerful they are. That's why they like printing more money. It makes them feel more powerful. Even though they really aren't any more powerful, particularly. In fact, they're not any more powerful at all. The GDP doesn't raise. You know, oh, we've got a growth rate of this much. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. And you go, no, it's not. Because it may be staying the same. It may be getting smaller. We may see some slight growth, but I doubt that very seriously for the simple reason that our population is starting to have problems. If we didn't have immigration, we would be losing population just from people not having children. I think it's funny with our current, with a lot of people's current attitude about immigration. You know, we have to keep these people out. And you go, are you nuts? We have to get as many of them to come here as we can, or else we're going to be losing population. All these regulations are supposed to stop us from having children or slow it down so that we can have more riches or whatever, you know. A family is richer if they have less kids, I suppose. In a fiscal way, I wouldn't begin to talk about the social, emotional, spiritual bank of a family. I think that stuff is, you know, when you choose not to have children or only have one or maybe two, you're really bankrupting everything else. But you say, well, I'm swimming in money. Me and my wife, we make tons of money. They go, yeah, but your souls have been raped because you've chosen not to pursue the things of real value. Family life, children, happiness. Not just for you, but for your kids and your grandchildren. All that stuff is washed away because one doesn't choose to go in that direction. Anyway, so. And put them on a tight little budget. Let them fight. They're going to fight anyway. You can't write laws to say the Congress shall not fight. Even when they say, and now I will turn some time over to the honorable lady from the other side of the aisle, they're still fighting. They're just using nice, tactful words for how much they hate something or how much they hate an issue or the person attached to it. You know, just because we're all using our words like they teach you to do in preschool, doesn't mean that all of a sudden we like each other. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means we've found more exotic ways of attacking each other that don't sound immediately like we're just being rude. That's all that means. And I don't know what that number is. We need to establish some kind of number. I would like to think of it as a percentage of some number that government can't really tamper with. Now that's hard because since the government has the power to print money without any backing behind it, you know, since since all these numbers can be played with pretty creatively in at least 10 or 15 different ways, that's going to be a hard thing to come up with. But it needs to be a number that government can't screw with, honestly. And that how much money that Congress gets to play with is a small percentage of that money. And that ends up being your tax. You know, if you're going to tax businesses 10%, and that becomes the money that government can live off of, or if you do tariffs on all the products coming into the United States from a foreign country, and you do a 10% tariff on them to help prop up American products as opposed to something from somewhere else, you know, that's the money they can play with. I know it sounds Pollyannish because you go, isn't that the way our system's supposed to work now? And it doesn't. And actually, I guess in a way, sort of, but no, it really doesn't. It's going to have to end up being whatever you get is what you get. And the biggest way to do that is to say you can't print money anymore. Whatever money is in circulation now, that's it. If somebody tears up a dollar bill, you don't print another dollar bill. It just disappears. Of course, that's going to be really hard to do because our money's not really physical anymore. It's bits in a computer. I know a thing about computers, I suppose, since I fix them and since I work on them and I make them run. I know a little bit about that. Don't try to voice myself off as an expert. But, you know, I know a thing or two about these things. I don't know how you would transfer that to some kind of physicality where you can't just manufacture this stuff. Because we do it all the time. Every day. A number gets manufactured, usually larger than the one yesterday, to say this is the supply of money. This is how many dollars there are in the world. You know, and every time you make it bigger, the value of each individual dollar becomes proportionately smaller. It's just the way it is, especially when there's no real, if there ends up being no real value behind it. You know, if we all of a sudden decide to publish $100 billion, but we haven't increased our productivity, or we haven't done something to make up for that new $1 billion in the world, then it reduces the value of what you've got sitting in your hand. It all of a sudden becomes less valuable. Now it may only be by a penny or two at a time, but still, it's a penny or two. These things add up. Trust me, and the inflation that comes from all these little fun games that we play whittle away at it harder to the point to where, you know, I got a 4% raise this year. Of course, you know, now it costs a lot more to live this year than it did last year, so therefore I'm actually losing ground, but that's okay, it feels better. Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that you're feeling better. That's great. Glad to hear it. Okay, so let's see. What do we have? Congress is on a budget, can't print more money. I don't know how to do that. I don't know if we're going to have to go back to gold just for the simple reason that you're going to have to do something physically in your freaking hands. That doesn't work a lot when there's too much, you know, the amount of commerce that we do. And commerce is not a bad thing. I like commerce. Commerce is great. I said, but, you know, if you actually had to physically have all the stuff that you were transferring around, you'd go nuts. That's why you have credit cards and stuff like that. Or that's why you have a piece of plastic that represent a pool of money. You know, it has an account, and in that account is accounted so many dollars. You know, that's why we have that, because to try to make all that stuff physical would just be nuts. I wouldn't want to have to try to carry around with me all the gold that my savings account and my checking account and all my other investments or anything else, I would have to carry around that gold, even if it's just like 5 or 6 gold coins. I'd be too worried about it getting stolen or losing it or anything like that. You know, I don't know. So yeah, I'm not sure how you come up with a way to change that system. I mean, one could just say one day we're not going to print any more dollars. Of course, how would you get any kind of feel for the reality of that, you know? Could you actually trust the people who are doing it? Or would they be playing around with it to their own personal benefit? Is that kind of what happens now? To a degree, yeah. So, okay, we have those ideas. I think the biggest one is that you need to strip government of its power. Its power base is mostly the amount of money that it commands. When it commands an amount of money, it enslaves a certain amount of people. A certain amount of people will do whatever the government wants because, you know, they hold their paychecks. A lot of people work for government, and if government were all of a sudden to disappear, you would have several people screaming because all of a sudden their livelihood is gone. It's not there anymore. One has to step back from that and figure out that you've got to be back from that. Now, how does this bring liberty? A small, constrained, and frankly, I'm sorry, beaten government. I think the best government is the government that has been abused and that cowers in a corner afraid to show itself because it's afraid it's just going to get the crap beaten out of it again. That might actually be the best kind of government there is. Now, I know that if that was such a government, you would have nobody who wanted to become a politician, you know, who wanted to go for office because office wouldn't hold any appeal. The whole appeal of being a congressman or a senator or a president or one of their appointees, for instance, is that it gives you power, prestige, things like that. If it wasn't so, most of the people that are there wouldn't be there. They'd be going into business. You know, they would go into things that by their nature have more prestige. Government doesn't by its nature have prestige. Now, it can when you put it on a pedestal. When you come from a culture of tyranny, of course you're going to have those kinds of things. You know, hey, I like being in Congress because I get to tyrannize with impunity. You know, the things that a congressman or a senator gets sent to jail for are very different from what your neighbor would be sent to jail for. Your neighbor may be sent to jail for drug dealing, which I think is a silly crime. You know, your neighbor may be thrown in jail for stealing television sets. A congressman wouldn't be, number one. They're, you know, when you make several hundred thousand dollars a year, what appeal is there to stealing a television set, number one? And number two, there's so much more you can do. It's mostly for ethical violations. Of course, you know, they get to write the rules of ethics themselves, so that's always kind of interesting. It usually ends up being, if, you know, most people who get punished are scapegoats. Let's be pretty honest about that. You know, you aren't gonna have the real criminals, the real troublemakers in Congress being accused of anything. I'm going to kind of open up the windows a little bit here. I hope that doesn't destroy the sound dynamic too much. they aren't going to go to jail particularly because they have the power. They can stop these things from happening. That's why you'll never see a president go to jail. It isn't going to happen. You'll never see powerful members of Congress go to jail. You will hear about junior members. You will hear about those who have bucked the party line of their particular party. You'll see them get crucified. Oh, they did this, they did that. Of course, that always helps make people feel better because they said, oh, man, you know, government people aren't immune to getting punished. And you see, just have to say, yes, they are. They still are. Have you noticed a big person going to jail for something? You know what they had to do to get there. You know the kind of deals, the kind of unethical behavior they've had to do, and yet it's always the junior members or the members who are now fallen from grace who are getting nailed for things. It happens conveniently every now and again just to keep everybody saying, oh, we've still got a wonderful system. It works. Look, even a congressman went to jail. There's justice. And you go, no, there's not any justice there. More likely than not, he was a scapegoat, he or she, were a scapegoat to so that everyone else can continue on exactly the way they always have. And you don't have to worry about it. You know, and they don't have to worry. Every year there is some sacrificial lamb who gets prosecuted. How many of them actually do jail time is a whole other issue. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to say they never do jail time. I don't know that. I don't know what kind of price they have to pay. I don't know if they get a reduced sentence if other people who feel badly for them start to intercede. If a couple of the other senators that were their friends go and talk to the governor and get him kind of quietly pardoned so he doesn't have to sit in jail, and yet they pay him off, so they said, you know, if you're quiet, you will get this wonderful pension for the rest of your life. Just disappear. This is a really easy thing to do. It's really quite simple to disappear. Not a hard issue at all. If you can get a hold of enough land, you can vanish on that land and act like you don't exist. And everybody will think that you don't exist. That, you know, frankly, that's kind of what I'm trying to do. You know, there is the whole culture of, you know, you can do the culture of liberty and you can be some kind of a weird freedom fighter and trying to get these things, you know, passed, and you can be a martyr to it and things like that. And I'm not speaking against those people at all. I'm very grateful for people like that. People like that that keep the thing regenerated. I don't tend to be a person like that, you know. Sometimes I feel a great need and a great desire, and I want to do something along those lines. But, you know, certainly not every day. Certainly not on a regular basis. I have a family to feed, you know. There is a lot of power to saying, I'm not going to upset the apple cart for the very reason that they could do something to me. They could hurt my wife. They could steal my children away so easily, it's almost sickening. And if you make your exit in a public way, you know, if you move off to some piece of territory but you don't lay low, you know, you kind of show people, hey, look, this is what I did. I got away. I got free. Guess what? It won't last. It will not last. Especially if you're saying something. They will come and they will get you. And they will make you pay for not being in the thick of things, which is being under their thumb. You will pay. But that's okay. That's okay. I will tell you one thing that keeps me in the culture of liberty, and that is that I have absolute faith that God will punish the oppressors. If you're being oppressed, you feel the need to fight back, you can. I'm not going to say don't. I won't say don't. You know, you need to work out with God at what point that it's appropriate for you to start fighting back against your oppressors. I don't know when that time is. So I just tend not to particularly. Except to just kind of give them kind of an anonymous jab every now and then where they really can't tell who did it to them. Just to make me feel better, I guess. Maybe that's just silly too. Because I have faith that God's going to take care of it. Those people are going to get the proper punishment for what they meted out while here on earth. It's just that simple. If you don't believe that's true, then you're faithless. You have no faith in God. God is steady wood. And if you take the law into your own hands, if you decide that, you know, oh, I've got to absolutely do something about this, because if I don't, who will? And you go, the answer is very simple. God will. I'm not saying you shouldn't do nothing, but I'm saying, you know what? Instead, it might behoove you not to sacrifice yourself foolishly, be some kind of a weird martyr. On the backs of this stuff, because God's going to handle it. Especially if, which is most likely, your sacrifice is worthless. You know, if it saves nobody, if you're just killing yourself, running up against the brick wall, well, that's it. I guess that's your reward for having done all that. You know, I died young, you know, fighting against oppression and the oppressive people just took me out like I wasn't even there. I got to talk to three people before they just stuck a knife in me and it was over. I got trampled. And you go, how many lives did you change? None. And you go, well, that was a worthless waste of your time. Much better for somebody like me, and here's where the power is. People can say that I pollute my children's minds, and I guess you could see it that way, especially if you don't like liberty, and there are plenty of people that don't. Plenty of people who are so upset and angry about, you know, you're going to cause problems, you're going to get us all killed, shut up. And you go, you know what? You know, I'm not gonna stir up any waves particularly. But what I am gonna do is, I'm going to continue the culture of liberty within my family. I got these ideas from somewhere. I don't know if it's particularly from my parents or my grandparents. You know, honestly, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I could tell you for certain that it came from them, but I know I'm getting sold on it, and I'm selling it to my kids. And I don't have just one or two kids. I got six. And we only stopped having kids because Lisa said no more. And I understand that completely. She was tired. She'd gone through a lot to have those six children. You know, so I'm not going to push her. But guess what? There's six people. I have tripled my number. And I intend on influencing them with the culture of liberty. I intend for them to spread it like a virus among their children. That's why I do this podcast, too. I don't just want my family to do it. I do want to pull in other people, too. A good, happy, wonderful virus that says, I will no longer behave like we're going to go into the well of tyranny. Some people will. And if they want to, well, God bless them. God bless them. Hope their lives aren't completely miserable. But as for me and my family, we're going to move in the other direction. You go, well, you can't just do that. You can't just move. That's just not realistic. And you go, you know what? So what? I'm always going to be looking at things. I'm always going to be sharing my outlook from the standpoint of liberty. You know, my children get homeschooled more than the children of people who support tyranny. You know, well, you gotta send your kids to school. No, you don't. You don't have to do it. So don't. Well, you have to participate in the economy, and you go, well, only up to a degree. And I get to pick where that stops. I can raise my own food. That's not illegal yet. And frankly, I don't mind the fact that a lot of other people don't choose liberty, because frankly, if a lot of people did, we would really be having our individual freedoms curtailed to try to punish us for wanting them so much, you know. That's what happened, you know. Do you remember Tiananmen Square? A pretty decent sized group of people were wanting their liberty, and they wanted it now. If it only would have been two or three people who quietly went around exercising some liberty, nobody probably would have said much. They might have gotten turned in by some overzealous communist. But chances are they would have gotten away with it. And I have to think first to my wife and to my family, to my kids, and my grandkids. And I want them to have that reality coming from a culture of liberty. These are things I can do, and I'm going to exercise them. You know, most people don't know that they have, I don't know if it's a right, but they can put up a garden. They can put in a garden, and most of the time people don't mess with you about it. And that gives you a wonderful amount of liberty, because number one, you're being productive. So many people in our culture are not productive. You know, we mostly profit off of transfers, transfer of this to that. We didn't actually bring any particular value to it, maybe a little bit, but nothing compared to the actual production of this thing. We don't get productive. When you're gardening and you're eating out of your garden, by your nature, you're productive. And that makes you more free. You have more money to spend somewhere else. You can say, well, you know, I've used up a whole lot of time to do that, and my time would be better spent making money. Maybe. But that doesn't necessarily make you free. It doesn't make you more free. It doesn't give you more liberty. Because oftentimes, you sell yourself over more and more to someplace else in exchange for money, and this isn't really so much a money exchange as it is a freedom exchange. Am I getting more liberty? No. I'm selling my soul more and more to somebody else for money, and I think that's the most important thing. And you go, well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not the most important thing. Maybe you should consider something else instead. That there may be things beyond money. If someday, and I think it will happen, it's been prophesied by prophets that governments will fall. Most of our money is based on a government who sets its value, you know, and everybody has to kind of accept the fact that this little piece of paper has value. If that government were to disappear, and we are told by prophets that most governments will, or all governments will, I'm not really sure about the specifics of that. But all of a sudden, then the money becomes worthless. It's not backed by anything. The government won't guarantee. There won't be a government to guarantee the value of that money. And then what will be worthwhile? It doesn't matter how much you labor in some office. If it doesn't produce something that you can take out and either eat or sleep in or trade off of the things that you need that you have never been able to buy yourself or produce yourself, all of a sudden you become a very worthless person. It doesn't become a whole value of, well, I'm worth, you know, I get paid $30 an hour, therefore anything, you know, if my 1 hour in the garden doesn't produce at least $30 an hour, that's stupid. I need to hire somebody else to do my gardening for me. Well, at some point, the person who does the gardening that you didn't pay diddly squat to, he's going to be worth a lot more than you are. And that's the way it is. I have to face facts that at some point, computers may not be that useful. They may not be worth anything. The services that I do now may become worthless. I don't foresee it, but, you know, it could happen. We might just decide that we don't need those kinds of things anymore in whatever new world that happens. We may not need it anymore. And if we don't, all of a sudden, what I do and get compensated for now, I'll have to find something else to do. Probably something that's a little more basically productive. Those who really produce food. Not play little tiddly games with things. I was just talking to a friend I know at work. He owns some land, and they've been putting up wind generators on land close to his. And, of course, everybody talks about how much money the power companies pay to those ranchers who own the land that they put the wind generators on. One has to lease that land. Or they do it on land that belongs to the state. It's one or the other. Anyway, so, you know, but that's somewhat artificial. Because those turbines belong to something. They don't belong to the rancher, that's for sure. He just owns the land they sit on. If at some point that power company goes bankrupt and people decide that an old, you know, used wind generator isn't worth very much, all of a sudden, that rancher who was doing rather well, just kind of being the owner of land that was being leased, suddenly have 28, 28, 29, 30, 40 wind generators, and that can become the bulk of that rancher's income. He isn't a rancher anymore. He is now basically a landlord over a bunch of things that don't complain. You know, it sounds really beautiful and great, and oh boy, when can I get into this business? But ultimately, one finds out that he isn't producing anything. You know, that wind generator doesn't belong to him. You know, whoever buys it next may choose to take those things down and stop paying the lease fee, and all of a sudden you're sitting on a worthless land again. Or land that has far less value than it had just a few, you know, just a few months before. You know, these things come and go quickly. You can go from being rich to poor in a matter of hours just based upon the fact that, you know, that what you had was only valuable in a certain context and under weird little circumstances. It wasn't really terribly honest. Well, no, I can't say it wasn't honest. It wasn't, it wasn't an expression of true value. You know, it was profiting off of an interesting circumstance that under normal circumstances would never have happened. And when I get presented with things like that, do I take them? Well, sure, I'll take them. But I'll usually put that money in the bank or invest it in something else. I won't try to use it as my income because that's where the danger comes in. Because what happens if circumstances change there? One can't just, you know, replace that money You know, I know my land is still worth that much. It was worth that much with a wind generator on it. I can find another way to make it worth that much. I said, what, letting them dump nuclear waste on your land? Oh, yeah, that'll do it. Well, I said, well, that won't last long. Once your land is full of nuclear waste and they can't dump anymore, you know, they're not going to pay you anymore for that. You'll just be stuck with a chunk of land that you couldn't sell if your life depended on it. In fact, you'll probably get sued by your neighbors for having, for the nuclear waste leaking onto their land from yours. Are you prepared for that? Boo, boo. Go, yeah, think about that for a second. Think about the liability issues there. You know, I don't want to get into all that. Anyway. Is there a few things we could change about government? That's probably the thing I would do. You know, if I became somebody who could just by fiat do maybe two things, the first thing I would do is wipe out the U.S. code. Every single rule that's ever been made by the federal government on anything would just disappear. And then I would slap the law on them that says that they can only write 10,000 words a session. You know. Or each Congress. Each Congress would only be allowed to write 10,000 words. And the whole thing is they would go, well, it's not fair, it's not right, golly, you're making this really hard. And you go, you know what, you get so much prestige and so much power from sitting in those chairs, one would have to think that you must be the smartest, the most brilliant, most cagey people in the world. Why don't you use some of that brilliance and caginess to write 10,000 words. If you can figure out a way to make 10,000 words that will totally enrich your friends and screw over your enemies, well then I guess you have the, you already do it now. All we're doing is we're making you start over again. That's it, really. Anyway. This is Jay Nemro. I'm in a stopping place. You've been listening to The Life Autistic. I don't know if this one was really terribly coherent. I got out there and I got passionate. Hopefully I didn't get angry. I know people will be corrupted by power. And I'm willing to accept that corruption. You just have to make sure that you limit the amount of power they can ultimately have. You might still want to give them a little bit because, you know, then you'll at least know where all the villains are. Oh, yeah, they're all in Congress. Yeah, pretty much. This is Jane, are we listening to episode number 639? If you want me to come and speak to your group, if you want me to say something to your things, you can contact me at 1-575-461-2716. And this is episode number 639. I forget what my thing was. Seek liberty.